Hello and welcome to the We're Not Experts History Podcast. Now, listener, when you usually tune in and think we're talking a load of crap, you're not wrong, but this time you're really not wrong. We are talking a load of crap. My name's James, and with me talking crap is Sarah.
Hello, and yes, I will literally be talking about crap. This is, if it's not something you've heard of before, you will think that I'm making this up. In fact, I met with a friend on Friday and I mentioned that we'd be doing a podcast over the weekend about this topic. And his response was, that didn't happen. You're making that up. And I don't think I managed to convince him that it was actually a real thing. I'm sure he went home and Googled it. But anyway.
I think that story fell down when you said you met with a friend.
An acquaintance. No, actually, no, a friend, okay? I have friends, real, actual friends that exist, not just in my head. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'll choose to believe you. Carry on.
Back to the topic in hand. I'm going to be talking about the Great Stink of 1858. And no, I'm not making that up. This actually happened, and it was actually called the Great Stink. It's not something I've just invented, a title that I've just come up with. It was the Great Stink of 1858, and it happened in central London. And basically what happened was, I mean, I'll go into more detail, but basically what happened was central London was treated to a smell that was so powerful it could literally strip paint. The River Thames, which had been the city's open air toilet essentially for hundreds of years, that combined with a heat wave led to this absolutely horrific smell. And it wasn't nice. You can't. Yeah, it wasn't good.
I've seen this tested on television in the past, where they've dug like a trench, filled it with water, then filled it with the contents of what was in the Thames at the time, and then left it in almost like a greenhouse type tent for a few days,
and then dared someone to go and sit in there.
The smell then was shocking.
Mm. I can't even imagine, but obviously as well, back then the Victorians, they didn't understand about germs and things like that, and they thought that bad smells were the cause of a lot of disease, like bad air, miasma, as it was called. They thought that was spreading disease, and so. Well, anyway, I'm not going to, because a lot of this I will cover as we continue. So that was just a brief overview of what I'm going to be talking about. The Great Stink of 1858, which happened in central London.
In 1858. Quite imaginative title.
In 1858. And
nearly 7 o'clock.
Is it? No.
1858. Moving on.
Oh, sorry. Been a slow day, okay. My brain is not functioning as a brain yet, but anyway, let's talk about London before the stink, before this all happened. So in the first half of the 19th century, London's absolutely booming. Population has exploded. Obviously, we've got the Industrial Revolution going on, so that's kind of having a massive impact on population and people pouring into the city. So, well, you should have, because we've done a whole thing on it. So, obviously, you
Maybe
were
I'll
asleep.
From my memory, yeah.
For anyone that is interested in learning more about the Industrial Revolution, please check out our 3-part podcast on the topic, which James obviously. Well, obviously James didn't listen to any of it, but if you'd like to listen to it, then feel free. But obviously that's all going on. So all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, it didn't happen overnight, but you've got millions of people cramming into a city that really doesn't have any concept of urban planning. It's this city is not designed for this many people. It's still not, to be fair. They're trying to chuck people out of London now because they just haven't got space.
Yeah, aren't they just?
Yeah, and we're getting them all here. Great.
Yeah.
And we haven't got space either. But anyway, let's not get into that. So there was, if you can call it that, there was a sewage network, but it was more of a suggestion than an actual network. Much of it dated back to the 17th century, and it was just a chaotic collection of pipes and ditches and wishful thinking. Much of the waste disposal still relied on cesspits, which were holes in the ground that were supposed to be emptied regularly by the night soil men. And they had to work at night because it was such a stinky, disgusting job that it couldn't be tolerated during the day. So that was a nighttime thing. But although cesspits were meant to be emptied regularly, that didn't always happen. So often they would overflow into nearby drains and cellars. Some of them leaked methane and other gases, so that would cause fires and explosions. So, yeah, not ideal. Obviously, you've got your street gutters and things, and they would be washing all the waste straight into the Thames. And the city's main sewers, where they existed, as I said, they had been designed a few centuries previously, and they were really designed for stormwater. They weren't designed as a waste disposal. So as the population began to grow, all of a sudden, the volume of sewage, it far outstripped the capacity. And to make matters worse, we've now got these new flushing toilets, or the rich people have got flushing toilets. The poor are probably still squatting over a hole in the ground. But this would have sent the waste straight into the waterway at a speed which the old drains just couldn't handle. So not an ideal system. And to make it worse, the Thames itself, it was a multitasker of the worst kind. By the 1840s, it was not only the city's main sewage outlet, but it was also its primary source of drinking water.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
I wouldn't even drink it now.
No. So several private water companies, they actually took water from the river, often downstream from where the waste is being dumped, and they piped it directly into people's homes. And the health consequences, as you can imagine, were predictable.
Oh, yeah.
But not fully understood at the time. So cholera was a regular visitor. There had been three quite serious cholera outbreaks recently, one in 1832, one in 1849, and one in 1854. And every time, thousands of people were succumbing to cholera. And cholera, in case you don't know, it's diarrhea. It's really, really terrible diarrhea, which is primarily spread through contaminated food and water, and it leads to severe hydration and potentially death if left untreated. And in a lot of cases, it would have been untreated, because this is way before the NHS and modern medicine. So if you got cholera, unless you were rich enough to afford some kind of medical assistance, a lot of the time, yeah, you would just succumb to the illness, particularly if you were elderly or young or weak. And it was known, especially in those days, it was known as the Blue Death, because severe dehydration from the illness, it would sometimes leave a bluish or greyish tinge on the skin.
Okay.
And that was due to a lack of oxygen in the blood. So people that had, you know, were kind of really quite unwell with it, they would have this bluish tinge, and yeah, they called it the Blue Death. But now, the prevailing wisdom when it came to illness, and as I kind of briefly mentioned in the introduction, was this whole miasma theory, the belief that bad smells spread disease. So Victorians did not know what germs were. A germ could walk up and smack them in the head, and they just didn't know. The concept of bacteria, and it just wasn't a thing. So their answer to kind of tackling illness was to try and deal with the smells, not the cause of the smells, but the smell itself. So just cover it up. And again, this would be a topic I'd like to tackle at some stage, but the whole idea around Victorian hygiene,
yeah,
it was very much cover yourself with scent to hide the bad smell. They didn't believe in washing and things.
Yeah. Which is an approach that was, well, they'd have gone for during the Black Death as well.
Yes. Yep.
So,
and the Great Plague.
Yeah.
So they're not learning. I mean, there were, I mean, you know about Dr. John Snow, and he actually had already made the discovery that cholera was a waterborne disease. And he discovered this during, so before this happened, he had discovered this during the 1854 outbreak, when he traced the source of the cholera to a contaminated water pump. And when he turned that water pump off, the cases in that area dropped significantly. So it was kind of, they were getting there. Certain individuals were aware, did have this awareness, but it wasn't like the common knowledge. So it was still very much behind when it came to kind of dealing with germs and bacteria and all of that kind of stuff. So, and as well as Dr. John Snow, there was another chap, an Edwin Chadwick. Now, he was a lawyer, and he was quite a well-known social reformer. And he had long warned that the infrastructure was hopelessly outdated. But although some improvements were made, it wasn't enough. So we get into 1858, and we end up having a summer that's so pungent it goes down in history as the Great Stink. So, and we're still talking about it today.
What a summer.
Summer of 69, summer of 58. Anyway. Sorry?
Both crap.
Yeah. Well, 69, I don't know, because I wasn't here. Mind you, I wasn't here. I wasn't here in 58 either. So, unless I was in a past life, but that's another topic. Anyway, so summer 1858, London's been quietly fermenting this disaster for decades, probably hundreds of decades. You've got to think, all the sewage from homes, businesses, slaughterhouses, factories, it's all going the same way, straight into the Thames.
So it's not just human waste, it's animal waste. Mm-hmm. You've got left over the bits that aren't being butchered from the slaughterhouses.
You've probably got chemicals all sorts of nonsense is going into this. And as well, this is the age it's the rise of the factories. So you've now got all these factories pumping out chemicals and things like that. So that would have had a huge impact on what is being dumped into the Thames. So because the city's sewers, they're not really a waste disposal. They're more like a waste relocation. They're just kind of shuffling the problem a few streets over until
it
hits the river. It's a bit like when we talked about the Black Death
Did we?
We did. And we talked about the Great Plague. And I can't remember which one it was. No. It's when we were talking about the Great Plague. But I'm sure it would have been the same during the Black Death as well. But when they employed the street cleaners to get all the waste out of the city, and they just flung it over the wall, over the city wall, and just left it on the other side of the wall. And that was, so it's kind of like not really dealing with the problem. It's just, oh, we'll just get it out of our way and just chuck it over there and leave it. It's a bit like that. They're just dumping it in the Thames, out of sight, out of mind. Not for long. Not for long. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Charles Dickens, he actually mentioned in one of his novels, Little Dorrit, and that was a serial that was published between 1855, Dorrit. I knew you were going to correct me on something. Between 1855 and 1857, he wrote that the Thames was a deadly sewer in the place of a fine, fresh river. And in a letter to a friend, he went on to say, "I can certify that the offensive smells, even in that short whiff, have been of a most head and stomach distending nature." So he didn't like the smell either.
No.
And I'm sure he wasn't the only one. But anyway, then it comes to summer of 1858, and the city is hit by a heat wave. And I think the temperatures reached probably the late 30s. So it was hot. It was hot. And under the blazing sun, the Thames, it turns from a little bit whiffy to literally weaponized. Like, the water level had dropped, obviously because of the heat, and it exposed all the piles of untreated human waste and all the industrial sludge. It was all just there. So the water's kind of going, and you just got left this bubbling mess of just all sorts of unmentionable things. Queen Victoria and Prince Albert, they attempted to take a pleasure cruise on the Thames, and they had to turn around because it stunk.
Oh, wow.
Which I actually find quite amusing. But anyway, yeah.
They're sort of protected from it. How they, you live in London, I'm sure that smell's going to spread, but they've thought, we can go on a pleasure cruise on the Thames, even though it reeks. They obviously didn't know it reeked.
No, it's kind of like, getting hit with the real life kind of thing. But so, yeah, that they got hit in the face of it as well. And
not to think of royalty being so out of touch with the rest of us, isn't it?
So to make matters worse, the smell, it didn't just hang around the river. It literally knocked on your door and invited itself in. It was just everywhere. And by mid-June, the first complaints were starting to roll in. The newspapers are reporting that the smell was alarming. Which is
alarming.
Victorian code for it was so bad it made my eyes water. And then kind of June, July time, I think it was more end of June, the stench, it stormed the Houses of Parliament, and the desperate MPs, they had to drench curtains in chloride of lime just to try and mask the scent, and they would hold debates with handkerchiefs over their faces. And as you can imagine, legislation to fix this, it begins to move quickly. We'll come back
something
to that.
We'll do something about it,
So I'm sure you're wondering, how did people react to this? Because, you know, this isn't something that you're just going to be like, oh, well, you know. Because it was intense. It was severe. So, I mean, for ordinary Londoners, the Great Stink, it wasn't really a single shocking moment. It was more just the cherry on top of years of bad smells. People had long been complaining about the Thames, because obviously because you've been dumping waste into it for so many years, it's not going to be pleasant. It's going to stink. But the summer of 1858, you couldn't ignore it. You couldn't cross a bridge. You couldn't open a window. You couldn't have a stroll by the river without being hit.
Straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, yeah. It just become impossible to ignore. So at this time, the political power of Britain, it was in the hands of Lord Derby's consecutive government. And we've got...
Conservative
government.
You misread it, that's all.
I did misread it. I read it as consecutive. Benjamin Disraeli, he's the Chancellor of the Exchequer. So he's basically the finance minister for the country. He decides where all the spending goes. And he played quite a big part in what happened with all of this stuff. So at first the government, they just tried to soldier on and pretend that it wasn't happening. They just tried to cover up the smell with lime, which is probably the equivalent of trying to fix a blocked toilet just by lighting a scented candle and just...
Something tells me something. They tried to pour something into the Thames to try and nullify the smell.
Yeah, I think at one point they actually employed, they probably must have paid them a lot of money, but they would put lime into the Thames, and they would have, whenever the tide was out, they employed men to spread lime on the foreshore in an attempt to try and curb the smell. But all they were doing essentially was just covering it up. The actual cause of the smell. And you know, people are still going about their daily life. So all of the stuff is still being added to, you know, there's more stuff being dumped into the river continuously. The smell's not going to go away unless something drastically changes. As you can imagine, the Victorian press, they had an absolute field day with this. There was a magazine at the time, it was called Punch, and it was also known as the London Chivari. And it was a British weekly magazine of humour. You can't imagine the Victorians having humour, but they did. And it was established in 1841 by Henry Mayhew and a wood engraver called Ebenezer Landells. Ebenezer is such a cool name. I wish I had an ancestor called Ebenezer, because it's such a good name. But anyway, I don't think I have. Or maybe I have and I just haven't found them yet. But
you change your name.
Mm. But and this magazine, it was very influential in the 1840s and 50s, and it actually helped to coin the term cartoon. I don't think they invented cartoons, but it kind of helped that whole. And they would publish sort of humorous images of politicians fleeing Parliament, holding their noses. And the Times, they described the Thames as a Stygian pool, which in Greek mythology, that refers to a body of water that is extremely dark, gloomy and forbidding, often associated with the underworld. Just a place of darkness and death. So that kind of sums it up, really, what people thought about this. And public opinion generally usually was quite slow to shift, but suddenly everybody's united in this and they're like, you need to sort this out because it's bad, really bad. And there's a lot of fear because, as I've said a couple of times, the Victorians are very loyal to this whole miasma theory, and they believe that this bad air is causing causing illness, and we've had three very serious cholera outbreaks. So that's convinced them that the stink could kill. So essentially, the Thames was the Grim Reaper in liquid form to them. They're scared.
If you're sticking to this miasma theory, and the Thames is that bad, why are people not just dropping dead in their thousands in the street?
They probably just didn't think about this. But what you've got to remember as well is they're probably just kind of adding two and two and making five, because they've just come off the back, not long come off the back of this very bad cholera outbreak. Well, actually, it was. I think the last one was in 1854. So it was quite a bit before this. But actually, no, we're in 1858. Do you know what? For a minute, I thought we were in 1870. Yeah. I'm losing it. So literally, within the last 4 years, there's been a serious cholera outbreak. Thousands of people have died. People think illness is caused by smells. And suddenly everything's kicking up, that there's a smell. And they're probably thinking, oh my God, we're going to get another outbreak. Like, they're getting scared.
What you're saying is that most Victorians were idiots.
They weren't idiots. They were just misinformed. And they didn't know. They'd never heard of a germ. Like, they didn't know what a bacteria was. Yeah. They didn't know what germs were. And the thing is as well is, if you think back to the plague, and they had this belief that, oh, smells, illness is caused by smells. And if you remember when we talked about the ways they tackled the plague, and because of this whole thing, the smell is making people ill, they started to clean up, didn't they? They kind of started to fine people for dumping rubbish and... And that had an impact on the rat population. The rat population declined because they were cleaning up. So naturally, the cases of the plague declined because there were less rats to spread the disease. So, of course, they're going to be like, well, we dealt with the smell and cases have dropped. So it's the smell. Do I make sense? They're going to believe this because they don't have anything else. They don't have any other theory to go by. So they're like, well, smell definitely must do it then, because when we got rid of the smell, cases dropped. So this is probably why they've stuck with this theory. They've remained loyal to this theory because in their mind it's been proved, oh, yes, it is smell. Because, but anyway, that's just how I see it. But you know what? Give it 100, 200, 300 years, people are going to look back on us and we're going to be idiot. They're going to think of us as idiot. How could they not know that? How could they believe that?
Why on earth did they think people were listening to this rubbish?
Exactly.
That sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. So we get to July. The sun is still blazing down on the Thames. It still stinks. And just imagine, inside the Palace of Westminster, the air's thick with probably not ideas, probably more smells. And you've got the MPs sitting, fanning themselves, trying to look statesman-like while discreetly breathing through handkerchiefs. And Benjamin Disraeli, he rose to speak. So this is them doing their vote on dealing with this smell. And... Yeah. You can imagine, like, so he's doing his speech and everyone's gagging, and the debate was brief, and absolutely nobody objected to pushing legislation through and spending a lot of money to fix this problem. Nobody objected. Everyone was like, no, we need to sort this out. This is terrible. It also might have been because everyone just agreed because they just wanted to get the hell out. But either way...
I don't think it's something you could argue. There's no smell, Prime Minister.
Yeah.
You can't argue it.
Yeah. So, by August... So, end of July, legislation was pushed through. And by August, I think it was like the 2nd of August, we meet Joseph Bazalgette, and he was the chief engineer for the Metropolitan Board of Works, and he was given the job of sorting out this waste problem and the money. That's the thing. He was given the money and the job of sorting out this waste problem.
Yeah.
Absolutely mammoth job. But, you know, he wasn't phased, and he had all these big plans, and he his plans were to build miles of huge intercepting sewers which would catch the waste before it hit the Thames.
Wise.
Yes, and alongside this, he would construct these massive pumping stations, which we still have them today. There's, I think there's one at Crossness, and one at Abbey Mills, and they're very posh looking buildings. And the sewage pumps themselves, I found this quite amusing, they're actually named after members of the royal family. So one's called Victoria, one's called Prince Consort, there's Albert, Edward, and there's Alexandra. So,
lovely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the royal family would have felt about having sewage pumps named after them, but obviously it was done to kind of honour the royals, but...
Well, you'd think. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, so he's got these big sewers, these big pumping stations, and he also planned to create new embankments along the river, and I think there were three of them that he built. There was, and again, they were named for the royals: Victoria, Albert, and Chelsea.
There was a royal called Chelsea.
Well, I don't know, actually. I don't actually know, or unless it was named after a place. Maybe. But these embankments, they hid the sewers, and they gave London a bit of extra land, and they look quite posh as well. Because that's one thing with the Victorians, that when they did have to kind of build these not very nice things like sewers and workhouses, they built them well. Like, they made them look nice. Not like today, when everything looks like it was built in Minecraft. Without mods. Yeah. So what the plan was instead of the waste being literally just pumped straight into the, well, they didn't even have pumps to start with. Instead of the waste just flowing through the sewer into the Thames, it would be pumped away from central London into the Thames estuary and then washed out to sea. So they were kind of still just dumping it in the water, but it was away from...
That's how Canvey Island was created.
Was it really? Are you joking?
I'm joking.
I was going to say. I wasn't sure what to say about that. But... Yeah, so because obviously this was before we had, I mean, nowadays we have the whole purification, filtration system. But back then they didn't have anything like that. So the best they could do at the time was to, they still had to put the waste somewhere, but they just needed it to be away from the city and where it could be washed out to sea and not just sit in the Thames and stink. So work began in 1859 and it continued through the 1860s and into the 1870s. So it wasn't a quick fix, you know, this took time.
Yeah.
And by the end, 82 miles of main intercepting sewers had been constructed and over 1,000 miles of smaller street sewers had been built. And
amazing.
Yeah. And what's even more amazing is that this sewer system, because Bazalgette, he actually had the foresight to make the sewers much, much bigger than what they needed to be. And the Victorian Londoners probably thought, what the hell, like, you know, you're getting carried away here. But modern Londoners are saying, well, it's lucky because London still uses that same sewer system that he built. And we're, what, 160-odd years later?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's been modernised, but the system itself is still the same system that he built. Because as well, in and around that time with the Industrial Revolution, which I keep bringing up, we had the invention of Portland cement, and much of the sewer system was built with this cement, which is why it's still standing, why it's still in use today. I believe that the old system, which was built in the 1700s, a lot of it was wooden pipes and brick, which didn't have any kind of staying power.
Yeah,
exactly. So you can see the problem there. So that essentially stopped the Thames from being the city's open air toilet. People could finally open their windows again without risking unconsciousness. And the cholera outbreaks in London, they completely vanished. And people didn't realise at the time, but it was because they weren't drinking poo in the politest possible way. And as I said as well, that the system still survives today, which is pretty incredible. Like, he obviously had a lot of foresight even back then to, you know, this what he wasn't, this wasn't a quick fix. This was, I'm going to solve this problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine now with all the things that we flush down the toilet, that the system probably is under strain again. But the fact that it lasted for over 100, well, best part of 200 years, we're still using it. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think there's a modern system alongside it as well, helping out.
Said. If you were listening, I actually said that, yes, modern improvements have been added, but the actual basis is the current system.
I must have nodded off.
Yeah, you probably did, because that's just, you're just annoying. So although obviously it wasn't a good summer for London, it was very smelly, it did lead to one of London's greatest civic improvements. So if you just look at the impact that summer had on London, yes, it wasn't nice for people, but it ended cholera in London. Probably not completely, but by the 1870s, the city had seen its last major cholera outbreak. Because what this new sewage system did is it cut off the contamination. So, massive improvement. The city generally was much cleaner and healthier, because there wasn't a ton of human crap sitting in the river. So there wasn't any bad smells, and the Thames was cleaner. It's laughable to think of the Thames as being clean, because it's not. It's disgusting. But compared to how it was an absolutely huge improvement. And it was a model for the world. Following London's success, other cities, so Paris, New York, they started to invest in large-scale sewer systems. And
Paris' sewer system mirrors the actual street plan. So you could walk, if you know your way around Paris, you could walk through the sewers and you're just walking under the streets.
All right.
Yeah, and I believe it's also signposted.
Really? I guess that's useful if you ever find yourself lost in the sewers of Paris. At least you'll be able to find your way out. It's good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know.
I'll see it happening.
Be a bit smelly, but at least you could escape if you wanted to escape. And I already said about the fact that the sewers are still existing 160 years on. it just shows that he had this great foresight to improve in the city. So pat on the back for that man. But it also kind of, it led to a bit of a shift in government responsibility, a bit like when, you know, when they started to introduce the welfare system and things like this. It become more of a public duty to, you know, sanitation and things like that, rather than, oh, it's not our problem. It become, and again, I think that probably came off the back of the fact that they were directly impacted because it stunk. So it kind of forced them into action. But so all in all, it wasn't a nice experience, but it did force London to swap centuries of filth for this marvel of Bazalgette's sewers, which was, like I said, it was an underground empire that still works today.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty impressive, really, and it's quite interesting how something so perceivably bad and stinky could lead to such a huge improvement. And I mean, can you imagine now not having a sewer system in place? I mean, something would have given eventually. You know, they couldn't have continued like that for much longer. But even if you'd added another decade onto that, can you imagine another few decades of having frequent cholera outbreaks, what that would have done to the population? Like how different things would have been.
I imagine it's got to get to the point where people just move into London to be abandoned.
Well, that's exactly, I was talking to my husband and he said it would have ended up as a ghost town because nobody would have been able to live there.
And with the population then growing around it, what's the chances of it happening in other rivers and tributaries?
Yeah, no, something needed to change, and this was kind of the smelly push that got that to happen. So, again, it's one of those unpleasant moments in history that you can kind of look back and go, yeah, it was a bit crap, but it was kind of necessary to happen. I'm not trying to kind of lighten it for all those poor people that had to suffer through that, but at least it was just the one summer that it was that terrible. Imagine if that had gone on for years. Like you say, London probably would have been abandoned because that was unlivable by the reports. And you know, if you're interested, there's so much, what's the word? Because as I said, the papers had a field day with this. So if you can get onto the archives, the newspaper archives, you will find so much information about this. And it's actually quite amusing to read about what the papers were printing at the time. And it really was a massive deal. Like, it was really, really terrible. I don't think I can... Yeah, I can't even imagine how bad that must have been.
No.
I mean... Have you ever, you know, when we go to the office, so the office that we work out of, it's based on a country park, and is it near a sewage works or is it the dump that we're smelling?
It's a water treatment plant, I believe.
Right, okay. So there's
you've also got a dump, but it's the water side of it that we...
Right, so there's a water treatment plant, okay, near where the park is, and when you walk in... If the wind's blowing the right way, it is intense. It stinks. You have to run. You cannot stay in that area at all because it's really bad. And so I imagine that it would have been a little bit like that, but a billion times worse, and you couldn't escape from it either. So I can't even think how bad that must have been for people to suffer. But it, you know... The problem was fixed, so happy days. But yeah, that's it. That's the great stink of 1858. And no, I wasn't making it up. Ooh. It actually happened. And it was called the great stink at the time. It wasn't something that we've come up with later to refer back. It was actually coined the great stink at the time of the happening. The papers called it the great stink. So it was a thing, but... there you go. That's my input on the great stink.
I'm going to answer it. That Joseph Bazalgette, his great great grandson, is someone called Peter Bazalgette, and he was involved in TV production for a company called Endemol, who produced Big Brother.
Oh, really?
Joseph Bazalgette took the crap away from our houses, and Peter Bazalgette put it back in.
Oh, that was good of him. But yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of like it comes back around, doesn't it? Yeah. Cheers for that, also, man.
He has made a program about the Great Stink. And he was also part of the Crossness Engines Trust, which raised $4.5 million to restore the Victorian pumping station, which was built by Joseph Bazalgette. So he's not all bad, but the fact that he's been involved in Big Brother and changing rooms tells me he's probably evil.
Changing rooms, that's fine. Big Brother, no, he needs to pay for that one. Changing rooms was all right. I used to actually quite enjoy that, especially when they hated the makeover. And they would freak. And were we talking about the right program where they would do
I don't watch this rubbish. I can't stand it.
Listen, can I just get this straight? So you are insulting this man's production and you've never even watched it.
Do with the Great Stink.
You're the one who brought it up and you're saying how bad it is. You've never even watched it. Changing Rooms was actually four times in the same sentence. Changing Rooms.
TV for the hard of thinking is what it is.
Granted, I do not watch much TV nowadays. I tend to watch more history documentaries. Stop talking over me. So rude. Oh, what?
I've had 45 minutes spoken over.
Say that again.
I've 45 minutes of being spoken over.
All right, go on, do the wind up then, and then I can just. So you ain't got to talk to me no more. I ain't got to talk to you.
All right, thank you for listening to the We're Not Experts History Podcast. Please remember, we really aren't experts. I don't think we've even bothered putting in effort in to pretend we're experts.
No. We're just very enthusiastic about history.
Occasionally.
Sometimes, depending on the history.